You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Chad Goodridge. He is an incredible actor, singer, dancer, and now producer as well, with a new theater company, which you'll hear about. I've been crossing paths with Chad pretty much all 11 years I've been in New York City, thanks to his friendship with some of my college friends and also grad school friends. We're always running into each other, and I'm a huge fan of his work and the peaceful way that he moves through the world. On a side note, I just wanted to make a recommendation myself this week. We went to see my friend's theater company, Lesser America. Their play, Half Moon Bay, is on over at the Cherry Lane Theater. We saw the very first preview, and it was great. I can only imagine how it will grow over the course of the run. It's a two-person play, which is tricky to do, but they're doing a great job. It runs through June 4th. Also, I'm doing a little performance next week on the 25th. It's with the Group Lab. You've heard about them before in the podcast. I interviewed two of their members, Vichet Chum on episode 6 and Jess Watkins from episode 21. So they've asked me to be a part of the WARE project, which is something they do maybe every quarter. They gather a group of storytellers and they tell two short stories addressing the questions of where are you from in the first half of the show and where are you going in the second half. So I'm terrified, which means it's probably something that is good for me to do. I'm excited to be a part of it, that they asked me, and excited to challenge myself to write some material for myself, which is not something I have a lot of practice with. So come out and send me good moral support from the audience. I would really appreciate it. It's May 25th at 7 p.m. The tickets are $15, which includes a beer. I hope to see you there, or send me good vibes from afar. I hope you enjoy the 32nd episode of The Compass.
I do a lot of things. I do a lot of things. I'm pretty regimented in how I structure my days. And that's always been a key thing for me, is making sure that on those days when I don't have anything, if I don't have an audition or I'm not in a rehearsal, how do I keep myself from going crazy? And over time, I've built up all of these things into my day. So sometimes, you know, it's like, for one, I have meditation in the morning.
Okay.
Always start with that. I've recently added back into my rotation free writing after my meditation. And going to the gym, working out, being mindful of my body has always been an anchor for me. I think that, you know, if I don't move, I don't know what's going on in the world. And so I make myself go to the gym like 5 times a week. And then I do my own stuff on the side, my day of rest. I mean, you want to talk about my gym schedule, but it really is. It's something that I dedicate myself to.
Right.
And beyond the sort of aesthetics of it, it's, is my body functioning in the way that I need it to function in order for me to live healthfully and to be aligned and to know where pain is and to erase pain? Mm-hmm. Because we store so many things in different parts of our bodies, and if I ever find myself slightly moving off my center, I always go back to my body. And I always try to locate where some sort of tension might be, or some unease or unrest. Because you can locate it, usually.
And you just find this, it's such a clear link between mental stress.
Totally.
And physical manifestation.
I think also, moving takes you out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
right? Like the whole mind-body connection is, it's like we think about the mind-body connection, but we normally think about the mind because that's the thing that gets in the way. Sometimes the body gets in the way if you have injuries or things like that that draw your attention constantly to that throbbing pain or whatever the case may be, or the things that you can't do because of a particular reason. But we carry around so many things that we don't even know we have. And that's been one of my, I guess, my biggest excitements, if that's something that I can say, is like learning more about anatomy. I may have mentioned this to you at one point, but I did this training for this modality that uses yoga as a template. And so you have a reference point, but then you're doing all these stretches and strength building exercises plus self-massage just to help you live better in your body.
And that's been in the last couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm. For the last 4 years I've been doing it. So I've been rebuilding my awareness of what my body is, learning what my body is and what muscles and what bones there are, because we don't learn these things.
Right.
Nobody tells you anything about what's connected to what. And I find that most people only learn these things once they've been injured. Mm-hmm. And they go, I'm always so surprised that someone knows so much about the knee and like what's connected to what and what's floating. And then it's always because they have an injury, not because we just have this knowledge that we should have, because we all have bodies.
Right. And you have knees that are hopefully.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, I was so mad initially when I started doing this training, because I was like, why doesn't anyone tell us these things? Why don't we learn these things? It's our birthright, if I can use that. You know, we are born into these bodies. And it was sort of maddening to me that there were things that I remember having an acting teacher who said, you're not breathing deep enough. You have to expand your belly and all these other things. And it wasn't until I did this training that I understood why. Mm-hmm. He didn't know why. He couldn't help me. All he could do was sort of point out the problem. And I went for years being like, I have shallow breath. I can't expand. I don't know how to use that part of myself. And it was like one simple exercise one day where I was so elated and furious at the same time, because I had just been given all this knowledge in such a short amount of time that no one had given me in all my years, you know?
Amazing that now you have it.
Yeah. And it really is. Really is amazing, because I find that if I'm working on a show, this has happened several times where someone else is injured, like somebody hurt their back and they can't do a certain lift. And for a day or two, they're walking around like, we have to change the choreography, or we have to change I guess in this particular case, it was like a fight sequence, and we have to change that. And I looked at this person one day and I was like, come here. And then I worked with him for 2 minutes and he was back to being totally fine. But these things aren't miracles, but they seem that way because it's so easy.
That's what we had 4 years of Alexander technique. Mm-hmm. Juilliard, and it's not something that I practice enough now, but Frankie and I talk about it all the time. Mm. The fact that it gives you so much awareness of your body, and I am aware of like when something is tense, or when I'm holding something that I shouldn't, or
right,
in a way that isn't, I'm overcompensating for something else. And just that awareness, I thought about that during that time so much. Like, what if I had never known
that
I carry my left shoulder higher? Because you see, especially when you see like certain elderly people walking around the city, mm-hmm, can't stand up straight or whatever, I'm like,
yeah.
Hopefully that awareness will keep me from that one day.
Yeah, absolutely. If I'm lucky. I mean, that's always a good reminder to see someone who's hunched over on the street. And I'm like, oh, where am I leading myself right in this moment? You know, that's like.
But every day is going to help me avoid that.
Right. Because a lot of those things that we sort of project as, oh, I'm getting older, so my knees are doing this thing and my ankles and I have this injury. A lot of it is things that aren't taken care of and things that aren't... yeah, I guess that's it. They're not addressed, or there's not an awareness of what is accumulating. Yeah. Yeah. And then so I even think about with cell phones, right? Eventually, it's going to be really attractive to have people with, like, you know, hunched necks, because we're all going to have hunched necks because we're, yeah, because we're all carrying our head, which is too much weight to carry forward. And then those muscles are compensating. This is like gym talk. Yes, we're that's what this podcast is called. It's called Anatomy of Being an Artist. Yeah.
Focuses you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that training that you did, it obviously has benefited you as a for your own use. Mm-hmm. But are you also using it? Like, are you teaching and stuff with it? Was that part of the goal or no?
It was never part of the goal. It was always I wanted to know it for myself. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to know, and I found immediately in the first 3 months of doing it, it's called Yoga Tune-Up, the first 3 months of doing it, that it was changing me. And I wanted to know everything that I could know so that I could take care of myself. And then from there, also take care of my friends and my family. Those were my priorities with this. Because I have done the thing of teaching at a gym, teaching at a big gym. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to just...
Well, I think that's something that's hard for an actor. Like, you're constantly looking for, like, well, what can be the thing that can make me money in between acting work or when I don't have that steady income?
Right.
That's also something I enjoy. So,
right.
Of course. Like,
right.
Oh, working at a gym, great. But then sometimes that's great. Sometimes it just sucks all the joy out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the last time, the last time I taught at a gym... that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
I found something that I was really excited about, was really excited about sharing with people and helping people experience greater potential in their lives and in their body. But there is always this, I don't know, attitude or feeling circulating it that was just kind of icky, you know. And also in that time, my focus was even then about alignment and not just doing things as fast as you can do them, because you're going to mess yourself up really badly, very quickly. And that also didn't really align where I was teaching, you know.
Have you found any good solutions over the years when you need to have a day job situation?
I find myself doing things that I'm not allowed to talk about. And they're not like, I mean, sometimes, oh, whatever.
That's for another.
I mean, what I will say about the financial aspect is there's so much shame around money and not having enough money in this country. Right? It's like the idea, and even thinking about Instagram and things that we like on different platforms, putting on this show of, I got this, and look what I got, and look at this, I just did this haul of all these clothes, and look at all these things, like, that is the aspiration.
What do you do? Because I know for me, and it's also because I just don't audition as much as I like, but if it is an audition coming up, I'll put so much pressure on it, because I'm excited, and I'm like, oh, here's the opportunity I have this month.
Or right.
So I'll fantasize a little too much about what it would be like to actually be doing the gig before I get
right.
it. You know?
Right.
And then it can self-sabotage the audition itself.
Yeah. I mean, there is that thing of wanting to put yourself in the shoes and put yourself in the place of, like, this is a possibility, rather than going in there and saying, there's no way that this is for me. There's no way that I'm going
to
get this.
Or people talk about being able to be like, oh, on to the next one. Do it and forget
right.
about it. Do it and forget about
totally.
It.
Totally.
You're not auditioning.
Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah. I mean, for me, there are a lot of things that I'm not interested in. There are a lot of things that I'm not at all interested in. And when something comes along that I am interested in, I'm happy that it exists. And that is a difference for me. Of course, at the same time, I'm like, I'm happy this exists and I want it to exist in my life. But
that's a generous way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there are plenty of things that come my way that I'm like, what? Who? What? You know, just so many questions about who this person is, what they're representing. So I really feel like when something good comes along, I'm really excited to do the work in the room. And I get really excited about that versus, am I going to get this thing? Like when something comes and I'm like, oh, I can actually work with this. There's something here that I can explore.
And enjoy preparing for it.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
That feels like it's true to me.
When did you start meditating?
It took me a while to get to it. It was one of those things that I was like, I want to do this. I know it'll be good for me. I want to do it. But I think it's been about 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did somebody introduce you to it, or was it just through your own research?
I don't remember. I think I probably picked up some books and maybe had some friends or one friend who was doing it. I think I picked up a book that had all these different meditations in it, and I started thumbing through that and just trying things out, really. And now there are different podcasts that I'll listen to from time to time. Mainly, I just do it on my own.
That'll lead you through the meditation?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and there's this great thing that happens every once in a while that Deepak Chopra and Oprah have this. Have you done that one?
No.
There's like a meditation challenge, and it's every day a different meditation, and like a mantra to think about. And that always feels like a nice, even though I'm meditating every day, that feels like a nice reset for me too, because it's new information. We're not necessarily new, but it's a new way of doing things for me that can open up a different channel.
Right.
Yeah.
Where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island.
Oh.
Yeah, just around the corner. Yeah.
So did you spend time in the city, like, as a kid?
I did. A bit. I mean, we would come in to see shows all the time. My mom loved the theater. Still does.
She's, but also
yeah.
When you were a child.
Yes, when I was a child.
Well, that's why I was going to ask, like, what does your family make of you being an artist?
They are so supportive and just lovely about it. Like, they come to see me and things. They fly across the country to see me and stuff. I mean, they would come up and see me in school, make like a 5-hour drive up there. And yeah, they're so curious about how I perceive things, because they'll go see something and be like, what did you think about this? And my dad now has this thing where he doesn't want to know anything about a show because I've told him, you know, just go in. You don't know what's going to happen. Just experience it. And so now, like, sometimes my mom will read about something. He'll be like, I don't want to know. You know, so they're very curious and very extremely, extremely supportive.
Are they creative in any aspects of their life, or is it kind of a completely foreign thing for them?
Not entirely foreign.
You said your mom loves to go to the yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
More of those people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They're both educators. So creativity in that realm. Mm-hmm. But or they both were. They're both retired now.
That's interesting to me, just because I grew up like in the Midwest, in the woods. Always, you know, hearing about New York.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and that's sort of a thing that I take for granted sometimes, is that I always thought that I would be here.
Yeah.
You know, it was never like, I'm going to New York. And I've been jealous of people sometimes who have that feeling of like, I'm going to go. But it's also cheaper for me to go home during holidays.
So did you move here right after college?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I did have a moment when I went to LA for a few months just to like try.
Right.
And I was like, let's just see what it's like to put my body in a different place. Because people do that. People leave where they're from.
Very different place.
Yeah. And it was really nice to give myself that opportunity because in a way, strange as it may seem, New York is kind of a safe place for me. I have tons of friends here from growing up. My parents are still around and I know this place.
Right, you know what it is.
Yeah. So it was nice to go someplace else and think, I don't know this place. I've never been there. Sure, I'll go over there. I've never been there. I'll go there too. Versus,
yeah,
I've been there.
How long did it take you to realize you wanted to come back?
Well,
I
was just going to see what it felt like, but I did end up having a workshop back here around the time where I was like, okay. And at that time, I also didn't have representation. So I was trying to like suss that out. So it wasn't that thing where people, that thing where, yeah, that thing where people go out there and like, they've got people taking care of them and going on appointments or whatever. But I was on my own pretty much. So it really was about how do I feel in this place versus how do I feel and how do I feel with the business in this place. The next time, maybe it'll be more of the latter.
So you think you'll stick it out in New York probably for the long term?
Probably. I don't know. I have an affinity for California. And I do like spending months at a time out there.
Especially like November and
March. Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, this year it didn't make that much of a difference. But yeah, I feel like I would enjoy myself out there.
No, I mean, there's definitely being able to have access to nature in a different way. Mm-hmm. Would be exciting.
Mm-hmm. And produce. Produce for me is the big thing.
The vitamin D from the sun. But it would be hard to be in a car all the time. That's the part I'm so addicted to.
Right.
Is not having to drive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and being in contact with other people, which is one of the, you know, blessings / curses about New York, is that
he was just out there for like 3 weeks, and he was saying it's just so hard to see people.
Mm.
Everyone's worried about the traffic and the time of day. And,
right.
Well, it's 45 minute drive and this and such and such, such parking and all this.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot to think about.
In different ways.
In different ways.
In Brooklyn, and you're like,
not going there.
Right,
you. Right,
right. Can I ask a little bit, because you were in Passing Strange, which I know was such a cool, large project that ended up stretching for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You were involved in workshops, and then they did a movie of it. And
yeah.
One, what was that like to be involved from the very beginning? Because I know you do like a lot of new work, workshops and things like that, and you never know which one is going to have a life and which one isn't. But also to kind of deal with having that like wealth of work for a little bit and then maybe not, and then again, and like, how do you deal with like the up and down is, I guess, what I'm trying to ask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, in that,
because it's not like always a steady
right
time,
right
I wish it would be.
I mean, even within that process it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because I did a very early workshop in California at Stanford and I loved the piece from the audition, and it was maybe 20 pages of material, and I was like, this thing is awesome, just from the 20 pages. And those 20 pages, I don't know how many of them made it into the thing. And loved that experience. Then there was a gap of time between when we went into production, and then we were produced at Berkeley Rep, which was great. And then we were supposed to come to the public pretty much immediately after that. But then there was a scheduling thing where we were told in our last few days at Berkeley Rep that that wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. So then there's that moment of like, well, I was just planning on having all this work immediately.
Right.
you know, ultimately it was for the best. But you do have those moments in time where you're like, but I want this, you know, this was supposed to go like this.
And like you said about structuring your time when you're not busy.
Right. Totally.
I guess it's natural, but that's such a big thing we have to deal with.
Yeah.
People tell you things last.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a job might last for 2 months.
Right. Yeah. And then after we were at the Public, we had another workshop before Broadway. I mean, there's so much. There's so much to say about that. It's been a while. It's sort of like how many medals did you win in track when you're in high school? You know, like that's no, please. No.
Because I know it's such like a
it is.
Part for you. And
yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. No, it's totally fine, right? The thing for me was like going into this thing, and we often talk about how it was like being in the Matrix, where we were creating this thing together and it was living and it was breathing and it had the freedom to change. Mm-hmm. Even while we were quote unquote set on Broadway, things were still evolving and changing throughout that run. Based on whether we wanted something to like pop in a different way, or we just discovered something different in a performance outside of the theater that we wanted to bring back into the theater. Mm. And so being in that situation and feeling like I have found a place that understands me and that gets me as an artist and wants to access parts of myself that most people either have no place for or don't know that they want, or you know what I mean? So that sort of eye-opening experience to go from that, and then when that was over, to feeling of like, oh, wait, because I knew it was special at the time, but there is a sense it's like, it's always going to be like this. Right. There's always going to be something amazing to work on, and there's everything that I get to put my hands on is going to be revolutionary, and you know, and it's like,
yeah.
And it's tricky. That's been sort of the trickiest part for me in general. Cause I guess where my sort of dark place is, and I tend not to really have too much of a dark place, but the little hangups where I get stuck are, nobody gets it. Nobody understands what I do. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And like, full stop, that's it, you know? And then what helps me in those situations is to be like, oh, wait, this one collaborator that I work with consistently, who tells me consistently how much she enjoys collaborating with me, and I feel exactly the same. That is huge.
Yeah.
And I've been finding that. And, you know, sometimes when I say it, I'm like, I finally found somebody who like gets it. They want to work with me. It's awesome. And so we're like doing this thing, blah, 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 whatever, whatever. But skipping over the part of it's incredible to find someone who is matching your sensibilities and also has such clear communication, because communication is huge to me. Mm-hmm. Like that's a major thing. And even when it's messy, even when it's sort of ugly, with the best intentions, of course, of making a thing or working with people, and because that's what it is, right? We're all human beings. We all have feelings and ideas and opinions, and we're meeting each other in these spaces, these rehearsal spaces, the audition room. I mean, that's something that it's like sometimes it's like, wait, I'm a person. Hello. You know? Yeah.
You feel like you're not allowed to. Or
totally.
So much of the power is on the other side of the table that you can't say anything. You're just supposed to do your thing and get out.
Totally. And sometimes for me, when I go into a room, it's like, depending on what the material is, or if I know people in the room, it's like, okay, I'm just going to get my stuff done and I'm going to get out of here, you know, which isn't always the best thing to do, probably. You know, it's like, how do they know that I'm not crazy and did I do a good work? You know what I mean? Like, but then there are those times, because I think about the people who walk in the room, like, hey, how are you? It's so good to see. Oh, yeah. Like, that's what I think of. You know what I mean? And it's not.
Some people who just seem like that's so natural.
Totally.
Totally.
And trying to find my version of that, where it's like, hello, hi, good to see you. You're a person, I'm a person, we're all going to die. And, you know what I mean? Like, these things. Yeah.
But so, going back to what you were saying, so is that something that helps you, is to like, oh, to realize, I do have this person in my life, and I can pour my energy into that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of waiting for the entire universe to get to that place where they really see what I'm doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm in a practice right now where I'm working with a composer and we meet every week to improvise, sing. And it's like a group of, depending on who's available, 14 of us in total. And that's been such a beautiful time to explore what it is to be in space with other people and also to let go in this way, because singing is completely vulnerable and it's even more vulnerable to not have a real structure of like what you're singing and what's coming next. And do I trust what's coming out of me? And
are you improvising with text too, or is it just melody? Or?
It's a little bit of both. So sometimes if text comes to you, you can share that. Sometimes there's a poem that we might riff on, and then other times it's just no text.
How wonderful to have that outlet there, to know you're gonna have mm-hmm. that every week.
It's one of the most special things in my life. And it's
that this composer just decided to try, or is this their process?
Yeah, she Marissa Michelson is her name. She's wonderful.
This composer,
this mysterious composer.
There's a lot of things to talk about.
No, it's, yeah. I can talk about Marissa.
Okay.
So this is, she writes her own stuff. She's had some musicals, and now she's sort of in the music theater world. And her work is extremely complicated, and working with her has made me a better artist, hands down. Like, I understand music in a way that I didn't before, and am able to learn music faster just because her stuff is so hard. And at the same time, there's a great generosity and open space for being exact, but also making mistakes. And she was excited to, this was something that she's been wanting to do for a while, a passion project to work with people that were sort of like-minded. And so I guess like last year she contacted a bunch of us and was like, I'm putting together this thing. Do you want to be a part of it? And I said, absolutely. Yes. And the group is comprised of like a jazz singer, other composers, a dancer / singer, and people who just, they're sort of masterful at what they do. And it's a beautiful thing that they all come together and they're like, I have this thing that I do. And then I'm also going to just like let go and go into this other process and see what that's like and see what I'm confronted with. Cause it's extremely confronting, we've found. And because we are so open in our communication, we have to get these things out so that we can move on, so that nobody's resenting what's happened before, or what happened last week, or second guessing what someone else was doing, like if that was a true intention or not. Because sometimes in an improv, you don't know, right? Because you only know yourself and you only know what you're doing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a beautiful thing for the practice and also for the communication and the practice of the communication.
Yeah, and you're all learning from each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're gearing towards making a full piece that is improvised.
Wow. Can we talk a little bit about Crowded Outlet?
Absolutely.
And how that came about, this new company?
Yeah, so Crowded Outlet is a theater company that I started with my friend and another dear collaborator, Wes Grantham, mm-hmm. who you know.
Yeah.
Saints to Sinners. I don't know if I still am, but I have been considered honorary. But yeah, he contacted me one day and was like, I want to do this thing. Do you want to do this thing with me? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Because like you said, I've been so involved with new work and developing, and I love supporting writers and composers in the development of their piece. And it's nice to be able to do that and not necessarily have to be in it to do it.
Right.
You know, it's like,
you're an associate artist director.
Correct.
So you're doing like producing and
producing and
finding the artists you want to that kind of stuff.
So we have a series called The Surge, which is a monthly series where we invite an artist to show something that they've been working on and just give them a space to work on it with some people and present it either publicly, or if they need a more private process, then they can just do it for themselves. And it was really fun to sit and think, like, who do I believe in? Who do I really like? Who do I think needs some more light on them, and to ask people and to have people respond like, absolutely, yes, that's so great, thank you so much. Like, that's, it's really, really yeah. exciting. And yeah, and it's been great to see everything come together in that regard. And we're also producing our first play, mm-hmm. Lone Star Spirits, which is going up at the 4th Street Theater
next month
in June. And so that's been fun too, to be in a rehearsal room and like watch the actors make choices. Cause it's not a foreign thing to me, but normally, you know, to see it from a different perspective is, it's really nice. And I of course love actors because I have to, cause I want to love myself. But yeah, to see and like watch actors and like, there's such a generosity there when somebody's really exploring and really figuring out what the questions are to ask and trying to find their way through a piece. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Have you had to deal much with, like, the fundraising part of producing? Because it's kind of great, like, the Surge series doesn't require, I assume, that much fundraising.
Right.
You gotta get the space for whatever. But for this production?
Yeah. A bit. We had sort of a small fundraising thing. We didn't do like Facebook and all that sort of thing. But yeah, it's interesting because again, like what I was saying before about there's so much stuff around money and like, what does it mean to ask somebody for money and like, how does that feel? And initially it was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But when I realized like, what is it for? And it also feels different because it's not self-serving. It's in the interest of, like, I'm not in any of these things.
I'm producing this one-man show.
Right. Exactly. All about my life in the theater. And, and yeah. So it's great because it's something that I believe in. And that makes it easier to do that sort of thing. But, again, like, making... I mean, I was going to say making money in the theater, but don't need to say that. Getting theater funded is a challenging thing. And I'm sure as like time goes on, it'll be less, well, it'll be a different challenge.
Right. Well, and you can also figure out like all the different avenues. I'm sure, like,
right.
Once you guys really start rolling, like Mm-hmm. And all of that.
Totally.
So you're going to learn a whole other set of things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it also makes me appreciate the producers that I have appreciated working with are the ones who show up and they're around, giving good energy, of course. And so that's made me want to be that. Like, when I show up, I want to be there in support and want the actors to know that I'm there for them if they need me. And
right, to take care of all of the worries so that they're free to just do the work.
Yeah.
It's always especially apparent to me when I, like, work somewhere regionally. Mm-hmm. And go, and it's like, the company manager is just so kind. And,
absolutely.
You know, and if you have a really good stage manager, like, if they just take care of things that you don't realize to think of, you're like, oh, I just have to show up and act.
Totally.
And reverse the split.
Totally.
How nice.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see it. That'll be really exciting. I'm excited to see what you guys do.
Yeah, me too. Because it's like, it's...
I only got to come to the first.
Right.
Unfortunately, just with schedules.
So. Yeah. Because it's... This year is the first step, and this production is another first step for us as a company. And we are excited about creating as many sort of different aesthetics and throwing them all together. And so it'll be exciting to see what bubbles up over time and what different people bring to the table. It's just something I'm very excited about.
Is there anything that you're really proud of that's happened in the last couple of years that you want to tell me about? Like, it could be something, like something that isn't necessarily apparent, or a lesson you learned, or something you were a part of that you're just proud of. I feel like so often we're like, oh, I have this thing I can improve on, I have this thing I can improve on.
Right.
But there's often other little experiences you have that you're like, oh, I did that.
Yeah.
I mean, scared of that and I did it.
I think one thing I'm very proud of at this current juncture is my ability to show up in a room and allow for my full self to be there, which also includes some of my opinions. And I've had very difficult conversations in various rooms or workshops or whatever, especially regarding race. Mm-hmm. And extremely proud of myself for just saying what it is that I feel and what my experience is.
Coming back to communication, like you were talking about before.
Right. And
it's always better just to talk about it.
Absolutely.
And have something.
Absolutely. I mean,
held within, you know?
Because especially, I don't know, it must feel the same as a woman to have things that are either just like thrown out there sort of willy-nilly, and nobody's really paying attention, but then you absorb it and you go home and you have it and you have this icky feeling and you're like, I wish it wasn't like this. And I wish this person didn't say that. And I wish people understood. And I wish, you know, all these things that you carry, but the other person doesn't carry it because they don't know that it happened. They don't know that it's going on. And it's just like how they're functioning in the world. But like, we carry these things. And I decided, like, I don't want to carry those things anymore. Like, I don't want to take it home and yell about it, you know, to either a friend or to nobody. And then just like, gotta go meditate. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Like, deal with it at the time and then move on.
Yeah.
You know?
Good for you.
And it's such, especially this conversation around race is so... It feels like it's so delicate and so precious because at any moment someone can feel like, oh, everyone thinks that I think this way, or, you know, now this means that I'm like this, and sort of having to navigate like, okay, all right. So when I talk to you about this thing, I don't mean that you're a bad person. Like, sometimes it feels like, you know, and I'm doing that less and less because now I'm just like, I don't need to take care of everyone else because nobody's taking care of me. And that's the thing for me. That's been the biggest thing is like, clearly no one's taking care of me. Yeah. I'm going to take care of myself and then we'll all figure it out. But if we're all being open and having good, clear communication with a, a goal towards living equitably and and happily and in just proximity to one another. And especially in the theater, it's like, and film and television, where we're sort of, and not to overstate it, but setting the tone for the culture. People absorb so much film and television and some theater, and they get their cues from it.
They try to see a reflection of themselves.
Absolutely. And I feel like there can be a little bit more responsibility taken on the creators of work to make sure that they understand what kind of power they can have and what kind of power they potentially wield. Yeah.
That's a wonderful answer. When you're having a day that you really are feeling like you're in the dark side, you're feeling uninspired, or you're feeling like you've lost your routine or whatever, since you have built up so many routines for yourself, we've talked about a few of them, but are there any, like, books you turn to, music you listen to, places you go, tangible things that you grab onto again and again?
I mean, there are different podcasts that I'll listen to. I've sort of set aside one day of the week where I don't take any media, like no Facebook, no Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. no TV, unless it's like documentaries and podcast. And some people are like, that's so extreme. Some people think that my life is really extreme. But it's like, those are the things, those anchors, because it's tough enough navigating being an artist, but then you're also living in New York City. And New York City, we forget about how much is going on and how much we are affected by the other people. Like, why doesn't someone understand that when you're waiting to get on the elevator, there's probably somebody coming out, so you should step on the side. You know, like those, like little things like that. Or like, wait, is this your first time on the elevator?
Or on the train?
Or on the train.
There's literally, there's literally things on the ground now that say, step to the side. So you're not staying at the door. People just stand
there. I mean, that's one thing I love about San Francisco and Berkeley is like on BART, there is that sign, but you watch people line up waiting to get on, and it's so civilized, you know, if I can use that word, and just considerate, rather.
Yeah, well, all those things, like, add up on you, barrage you.
Mm-hmm. So there are podcasts that I listen to, of course, any music that's well-produced, I will listen to and like crank up and maybe just like dance it out if I need to.
Yeah.
I don't always do that, but that's like if I'm really, really, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm like, nothing's gonna happen, like, I've lifted too many things and I need to like do something different, just change up the rhythm in my body.
Yeah.
I think there's also one writer that I go to from time to time, David R. Hawkins, MD, PhD. He's written a few books, one called Power Versus Force, there's one called Letting Go, that usually I use for my Alexander time, for my headbook.
There's always plenty of time for whatever you use as your headbook.
And his work deals with kinesiology and understanding emotions and like how emotions are really just a signal for where you are, and it's just information. And then sort of like anger is better than despair, and there's like an idea of an emotional scale all the way up to joy, I don't know, something like that. But it's really great stuff.
Yeah, I'll have to find it.
Yeah.
And then the last question is, do you have any shows that you've seen lately that you want to recommend? Or friends' works or anything like that?
I haven't seen anything recently. I think I've been going to lots of readings. I've been very excited by Jocelyn Bio, who's a writer and actor. I saw a reading of hers at the New Black Fest a few weeks ago, and I told this to her. I was like, I love your brain. Like, I love her as a performer, and I knew I was going to go there, and I was like, I knew I was going to love what you did, and I did. It was like, you know, this, yeah. Yeah, and that thing of when you feel like a laugh has been ripped out of you, you know, where it's like you don't feel it coming, and then all of a sudden you've like lost control of yourself, and that to me is one of the best feelings, when it's like just like hits you upside the head. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, those are violent descriptions of like laughter, of like ripping and it hit upside the head.
I wasn't combing my mind. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah.
I could talk to you all day. This is great.
Thank you. It's been nice to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. I'm Leah Walsh. More episodes are coming soon. Please look for us on Facebook and iTunes. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.